is Scott.
This is Pat.
You want to stick around for today's program, and here's one of the reasons why. Look, we're going to talk about the number one thing that people look for in their financial advisor, expect from their financial advisor, and why their financial advisor cannot give it to them. The one thing they're hoping for.
And we're going to talk to a gentleman that calls in, and the problem he has will only be solved with an IRS private letter ruling.
Now, that's good radio right there, Pat.
It doesn't get any better than that.
Providing guidance as you plan and transition into retirement for over two decades, here's Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean. Thanks for joining us.
Glad you're here with us as we talk about the world of finance. And I tell you, it's a... you know what? I'm getting too...
Let's go.
Huh?
Say what you're going to say. It's a talk show.
I don't know if you saw the story in the last week or so. The NASA found another sun that had... seven planets around it that 40 light years away that they said it's
40 light years.
Yeah, so we'll never get to find out. But
40 million.
It was,
you said
whatever.
40 light years.
I don't know how many light years. No, I think it was 40 light years away. Wasn't that far.
Okay. So, 40 light years. I don't even know how long a light year is, but.
It's a long time.
Okay.
That's all I know. But they actually thought this could probably support other life forms.
Oh.
Because the look, and I thought. It was just one of those things where I was just pondering the vastness of the universe and my insignificance to
right.
It. But yet here it is, money matters. You're looking at me like I'm crazy. I'm just thinking that's where I started today.
Is that right?
What a miracle it is that we're here. About that. And all that going on. Yet we have an opportunity to experience today. Experience Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
What show is this?
I don't know.
This is a financial show.
I've been talking
show.
To my dad too much.
This is a financial show. Isn't that not, that is out there.
Huh? Anyway, both myself, well, Pat and I have been doing this program for 20 some odd years.
I'm the reasonable one.
Reasonable. Are you the reasonable one?
That's everyone knows me as the reasonable one.
Oh, you know those two guys. Yeah, Pat's the reasonable one of the two. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, so you're the reasonable one, and I'm the... anyway, great program today, as always. Well, not always. Most programs are pretty good. Every once in a while, we get a bad one, but we think we've got a good one today. But starting out, here's... if you want to join us and have a question for us, like to be a caller on the program, we'd love to take your call. And we've had... I don't know how many calls we've fielded over the years.
Yeah. We've been doing it for, we're like almost 1,000 shows or something like that.
So anything that's going on in your financial life or you're contemplating, it's a great place to come. And I tell you.
Well, what's the number? 888-2-HANSON. If you want to join the show, 888.
It, I'm.
242-6766.
How many shows is it? How many calls do we have between, I mean, where someone was taken advantage of, sold the wrong product, 1 out of 10 or something? I don't know.
Oh, at least.
A lot, right? People sold something inappropriate. So the beautiful thing about this program is you can run an idea past us before you do it.
Call us before you make a decision.
Yeah.
Before you sign on the dotted line.
Yeah, we're happy to help and give you your opinion on things. And we're not selling anything here other than our advice.
Yeah, and for that, all you have to do is listen to the commercials.
It's pretty cheap. Yeah. And if you're a podcast listener, you don't know even that. You just have to podcast. And charge, keep your little listening device charged.
And remember us when you have a financial need.
So, to join us with your financial question, it's 1-888-2-HANSON, 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 1-888-242-6766.
So before the show, our fabulous marketing team and producer came to me and they said, hey, Pat, we've been tracking the blogs on our website, hansonmclean.com, under the radio section. They track the number of people that are reading whatever blogs we're posting there. And Scott, your one blog that you wrote for an article for the CNBC article has been a big hit. At HansonMclean.com.
Is that right?
Yeah, big hit at HansonMclean.com. So.
We had almost 12 viewers.
Yeah.
No, I'm joking. We've got tens of thousands of people receive our weekly
email. Yeah. So if you're not getting our weekly email, you could register to receive the weekly email at handsomeclean.com, or I'm going to save you a trip to the website. You could go anyway if you wanted at handsomeclean.com, if you remember the name handsomeclean.com. And if you go to the radio section, you can read this. But I'm going to bring you through what Scott's article. In fact, the man himself will help you cover the how to protect yourself from a financial advisor.
I don't even know what
you're
referring to.
Your article for CNBC, which was how to protect yourself from a financial advisor that is a part-time fiduciary.
Yeah, yep.
So you wrote it.
You know, it's funny. So I wrote this article early one morning. I tend to write early. I wrote this article early one morning. I write for CNBC. I write for Kiplinger and a couple others. I wrote this article, and I wrote the article, and then I read the paper. I read it on my iPad or whatever. It was early in the morning. And the Wall Street Journal, the same day, had two different articles on that very same thing. No, I take that back. It was that night. It was for Saturday's publication. It was a Friday. They had two articles on that very same thing. And I thought, well, obviously, this is something that's resonating. Because what this has to do with that financial advisor can be a fiduciary part of the time and yet be a commissioned salesperson the other part of the time.
Which means half of the meeting, they need to put your interest first. And the other half of the meeting, they don't.
Now, have you been following any of the stuff in the news about fiduciary? And if you haven't, then
don't
God
get
bless
too
you.
Don't get too caught up in it.
Yes, yeah,
it's just what's happening in our industry that makes the advisor more responsible to the client. That's all it's intended to do, is to make
it's intent. Yeah,
the intent is to make the advisor more responsible for their actions and how it affects the client.
But a financial advisor can call themselves a fiduciary and truly act like one, which is putting your interest first on part of the advice that they render. And then they could take off that fiduciary hat and put on a hat of a salesperson and sell you a commission product.
As an example, we're in three markets with our offices, Sacramento, San Francisco, and Denver. There's an advisor in one of those markets that advertises the fiduciary that he is or she is, but then sells big, fat commissioned annuities to the people that come and visit him or her. Which is exactly what this article is going to. Or someone who is a fiduciary charging you a fee, but then takes your money out of that fee-based account and will buy something like a non-traded real estate investment trust.
That's right.
Or take some money out of that account. So for one minute, they're acting as a fiduciary, and the next moment, they're acting as a commissioned salesperson. Why do you care? Well, you want to know that they're making advice that is in your best interest. Most people don't mind paying for good advice. They just want to know what they're paying and why they're paying for it. So here's what you need to ask the person that calls themselves a financial advisor when you're sitting down with them. And once again, you could get this article on our radio, handsomeclean.com. Go to the radio section. Find out if your advisor is licensed to sell securities or insurance. They have a license. Ask them about it. Doesn't necessarily mean that it's wrong that they have it, but you want to know why and what they use it for. Ask your advisor if they receive any compensation in addition to the management fee that they're charging on the account. Is there some back-end deal that could be a giant red flag for you? Have your advisor tell you exactly how they act as a fiduciary to you. And then finally, stay away from an investment that doesn't price regularly and trade on an exchange.
And I go into detail on all that in my article, by the way.
And you'll know from this show, we are not a huge fan of annuities. But in saying that, there's been rare, rare cases where we've actually recommended them.
And well, matter of fact, Pat, back
in that is the case.
In the early 2000s, it was our opinion that these insurance companies were mispricing the insurance that they had.
That's correct.
And we looked at some of these products like, you know, someone could actually be able to insure a portfolio with very little cost. And if things go south, the insurance company's on the hook. And if things go great, then the client can benefit from
We used them back then.
So we did use them back then.
And as it turns out, the insurance companies are trying to buy these contracts back from our clients at a premium.
Yeah, big premium.
Which means that they're trying to pay for more than the value of the annuities.
They're trying to, they're giving people money to leave.
Correct.
No not only is there not a surrender charge on them, they want to give people money to leave.
Yeah.
But oh, you have $100,000 there? We'll give you $110,000
to leave. That is a rare, rare, rare thing.
Yeah. Anyway, there's a, it's a great,
great article.
It's a good article. And so, anyway, we would love to take your call, answer your question, to join Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Call us at 1-888-2-HANSON. 1-888-2-HANSON. And we're going to talk with Dennis. Dennis, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi.
Hello, Dennis.
How you doing?
We're doing fantastic. How are you doing, sir?
Fine. My question is about Social Security.
Okay.
I am 68 years old. I retired from education at 62 with my pension coming from SDRS.
Okay. Which is, for the rest of the listeners, that's the state teacher retirement system.
Correct. I have paid into Social Security over my lifetime, so I have more than my 40 quarters in the system. But my benefits from Social Security are means tested because my SDRS windfall elimination provision falls into play.
That is
right.
Correct.
WEP, yep.
I started taking my reduced Social Security at 65, but I have been working in another field since my retirement at 62 and have been paying into Social Security ever since.
Right.
And that amounts to about $3,500 a year. My question is, will my benefit from Social Security be adjusted when I take myself completely out of the workforce?
It should be adjusted each year currently.
Yes. And I think, have that provision where you can pay back your Social Security benefit? Do they still have that? They don't have that.
No.
That was eliminated.
That's correct.
Okay. I love the fact that they called this.
I'm 99% sure on that, by the way.
I'm not 100% certain.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Okay. Which is the windfall for those teachers that retire, that they actually have the courtesy of calling it the windfall elimination provision. The windfall. Like you won the lottery.
No. That's an insult.
Isn't it insulting? The windfall. You're like, wow, Dennis.
It could be a
good job on the windfall. Yeah. So your Social Security benefit should have been adjusted every year based upon those deposits. And
it not? Has it not gone up at all? Of course, they keep increasing Medicare Part B. So they give you a little bit more on the Social Security and take it away in Medicare B premiums.
Yes. Yes, because they automatically deduct my Medicare for my Plan F, the gap.
Yep.
From my Social Security payment. So I really don't see it. So...
Just because I question myself on this, I would check to see if they used to have a provision where you could buy.
Why would he want to do that? He didn't.
It might make sense for him. Do you need the income?
I'm 99% sure you can't buy it back.
All right. Anymore. Scott's right.
I didn't say it was right. All right.
Okay.
Anything else, Dennis? All right.
But appreciate the call.
Glad you called. Again, if you want to join Hanson McLean, 1-888-2-HANSON. And numerically, 1-888-242-6766. Let's continue. Colin, let's talk with John in Fort Collins. John, you're with Hanson McLean.
It's a pleasure to be with you, and thank you for taking the call.
Thank you, John. How can we help you today?
The issue is I've got a state pension program that I'm part of, and I'm just turned 70 and a half. Recently, and so I'm subject to the RMD of the federal government to take a certain amount out. Unfortunately, this pension program, which has an employer contribution and employee contribution, it also has a life insurance rider on it for two times the value of the account, which leverages it fairly high as a total value package. The RMD, however, does break out a small amount of money by requirement, about $1,000 in this case, to pay a $200 roughly federal tax on it. But the way the pension fund is set up, I believe it's like an annuity that you can't take a dollar out of it without closing the entire fund and taking the entire amount out. So the problem is...
You've got this life insurance.
Yeah, you lose the life insurance, it's gone. So all of that package for a few hundred bucks, which the problem's not paying the tax. The problem's finding a way for the IRS to accommodate that situation that they're blowing away a fairly large amount of money.
So what's the account value on it? What's the account value?
The account value on this one's on the employee side is about $27,000, and then the employer side would take it up to about $53,000.
And is this a 457 plan, deferred compensation plan? Which state is it?
It is not. It's not a 457. I think it's come under a class of 403.
Okay. 403B?
Yes.
Do you have any other 403Bs?
Well, and that was an opportunity to look, and the answer is no. Actually, the fund managers, this is the state of Wyoming where it is, the fund managers had suggested taking it out of the 457, and later on found out that they made a mistake, and you couldn't put it back, but it didn't apply to the type of pension fund that's in.
All right, Scott.
Doing a little research, there's a number of states in that same position with similar pension funds, and I wonder how many RMD is tripping and how much of that life insurance is being lost in the values related to it.
So, John, I don't quite understand why you can't. So your required minimum distribution on this will be...
I understand exactly what's going on.
About $1,500, $2,000, right?
Yes. Here's what's going on. The investment product behind this has some life insurance with it.
I get that. Right?
And the older we get, the more likely they're paying on the life insurance. At 70 and a half, it sounds like it's an all or nothing. If you want to take a dollar out of your retirement plan, you got to take the whole thing out.
So what they're doing is forcing the collapse.
They're forcing people to take their money out while they're still alive, so they don't have to pay the death benefit.
Yes, I would agree with that analysis.
Well, wait. Well, why can't you flip the whole product out into an IRA then?
Yeah, but the key issue is you're losing. You're losing.
Here's how I view this. All right, so let's assume for a minute we did not take our required minimum distribution out and looked at the tax penalty there. Right. So if you called and said, "Hey, I've got terminal cancer. I've got 3 months to live. Best case scenario."
We would tell you just pay the penalty on there and let it ride.
Yes.
So how is your health, John?
Yeah.
It's
good thing you guys are on the West Coast. That's all I can say.
It's a morbid question. It's a morbid question, but it's true.
Well, it's true, but really, this account, particular account for me, the goal was to have it as a death benefit in an account for my spouse.
Yeah, right. Yeah. We get it.
And then in turn for the children. You know, I didn't really want to touch it forever.
I mean,
until it, that kind of thing. But that's just blowing the sky high. The tax issue and paying the tax would be one way to do it. But I'm just one of those guys that likes to follow the rules and make sure everything's
nice. Oh, no, you'd be following the rules. You're paying the penalty.
Yeah.
We're not saying that's the right thing to do.
That's a thing you can do.
The other thing I'm looking at, is there a way, do you have any other money in IRAs?
I do, but not in a four. I've already pulled money out of another account equal to the entire RMD for all accounts.
You did?
Then we came back to this one again, and the financial advisor said, well, wait a minute.
It's a 403B.
It doesn't apply to that account, even though you took it out of another account.
That's correct.
You can't apply it to what? Yeah. I'm trying to stay away from folding this one.
Mm-hmm.
The penalty would be 50%, could be 50% each year compounded.
That's correct.
For the amount.
That's correct.
What
it comes down to is you no longer have free insurance here.
Yeah.
You're 70 and a half, so if you want to take your required minimum distribution in compliance with the tax code, you're going to have to pull the money out and you're going to lose the life insurance. Your other option is you keep the money there. You do not take your required minimum distribution. You still remain in compliance with tax law by paying the 50% penalty.
Plus the taxes. Oh, he wouldn't have to pay
the
taxes.
So would I submit then an amount? I would pull an amount equal to the tax.
They can still catch you up on this.
Yeah, see? see, and I wouldn't lose the life insurance. We're not talking about me. We're talking about my wife.
Oh, no, we get it. Well, no, you're the owner of the life insurance. The life insurance is on you. The benefit is to them. We're not going to argue that point.
Okay.
Here's what I would do. If I were you, I'm not giving you this recommendation. I'm just saying, here's what I would do if I were you. I would satisfy... Listen to me.
Okay. Go, Scott.
I would satisfy the spirit of the intent of the required minimum distribution. You can take a... You can sum up all of your IRAs and take out that required amount just from one of the accounts, not from all of them.
And that I've done. I feel able to show that.
So what you're saying is...
I cannot, as a financial advisor, cannot provide...
He's got to get a private letter ruling is what he needs to do. You want to get this thing done right? You need to get a private letter ruling that says exactly
that's
that.
Right.
Now, explain that. You mean do a private letter to the IRS between me and the IRS?
Yeah. So how much do you have in other IRAs outside of this 403B? How much do you have in IRAs?
Well, several hundred thousand.
Okay, beautiful. And
how much life insurance benefit does it? This is a really interesting call. How much life insurance benefit is in here?
In this one here, you'd be about 60,000.
On top of the 53,000 you have already.
Yes.
Yeah. So $60,000 of life insurance on a 70-year-old man.
Back to the question. How's your health? Because
just to create a problem for you, I won the 5-state lifting championship for my age for weightlifting.
All right,
that's awesome.
So when you did threaten me,
that is awesome.
So when you did threaten
you
me, I should have been afraid. Am I getting that right? Because you said, "Good thing I'm on the West Coast." Because I said that like this guy's got to come down here, and I personally, if was in good health like this, I wouldn't worry about it. Here's a distribution. Scott, are you kidding? The only way to make this thing right is to go to the IRS, go to a tax...
It's not going
to
be worth your time.
...accountant, get a private letter ruling from the IRS that allows you to take the 403Bs
IRAs. If you're one of those guys that just loves a fight, maybe you are. You're a weight...
Well, he's a weightlifter. He's 70 and a half years old. He's the 5 states and the state of Wyoming, for goodness sakes. There's nothing but strong people that live in the state of Wyoming.
Yeah, I would tell you that, first of all, I like the thought of the letter, and I will do a paper trail with the IRS. I did call them.
No, it's more than a paper trail. It's a formal process that's called a private letter ruling.
It is where you go to the IRS
a cost involved,
and you say, this is my situation. I want you to give me specific direction on how I can handle this. You go
I
with
bet
them,
you'd win this. I bet you would win it.
Yeah, because I called them. I did call them and talked and went through several people and hard to find people with any depth. Everybody quotes what's in the brochure.
Yeah, Lois Lerner's gone, so we can't talk to her.
Yeah, the one lady said, who was a senior individual, said, that's your problem, not ours. Well, if it's my problem, there's millions of Americans that are in public office running into the same thing, or have to be.
Yeah, so John...
And those insurance writers, for their benefactors, the individuals, their spouses and children, literally are smoke and mirrors because they won't get to collect it.
That's
if their tripwire hits this RMD.
That's correct. That's correct.
It's not about paying the tax.
But a private letter ruling doesn't apply to anyone but you. That's why it's called a private letter ruling. So if you want to do this for the better good of all, you're not doing it the right way. A private letter ruling is where you go to an accountant. You say, this is my problem. Here's what I would like them to say. And you say to the IRS, look, I've got $260,000 in 403Bs and IRAs. I have a required minimum distribution. Will you please recognize my RMD only on my IRA and let me defer the distribution on the 403B? My guess is they'll say yes, but there's a cost associated with that. So if you, after this phone call, if you Google private letter ruling, tax accountants, Wyoming, Colorado, you will find someone that does these. Call them up. They'll quote you a price. You got to go from there. But again, you're not doing it for the good of all mankind because private letter ruling only applies to you.
But it does build some precedent.
Yeah, and you apparently, you're 70 and a half years of age and you're a huge weightlifter. You like the challenge.
I do like the challenge. Besides, I've been a government official at the cabinet level. And I see a flaw that you'd like to correct.
Now, I'm with you.
First thing is understanding it. And second, I like what you're saying. And I think that's the direction and I will take that direction because I think it's the principle as well.
Yes.
And I'd like to find a way to manage it. Then it's up to figuring out maybe with other people, how do you make this work for
well,
other
they'll
folks
point,
as well?
They'll point to your private letter warning. So we appreciate the call and thank you for being a listener.
A great job for me. Really appreciate it. Thanks a lot for taking the time.
Thanks, John. That was, you know, it's funny. It's funny because we've been doing the program for so long, and every once in a while you get a call that is just never had that before.
Nah, would have never guessed it.
And he threatened me, which I kind of loved. But you have that quite often.
Oh, it happens all the time.
I just kind of knowing
at
you.
At least once or twice a week.
Yeah, I've been out to dinner with you before.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, we're taking a quick break. 1-888-2-HANSEN is the number to join Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Stick around for more Hanson McLean. We'll be right back.
Back to one of the longest-running financial programs. Here's Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Scott Hanson and Pat McLean back with you, Hanson McLean.
Thanks
Glad
for,
you're with us.
Thanks for staying tuned in. So if you listened to that last call and you thought, that was pretty interesting, I wonder how required minimum distributions actually work. If you go to our website, HansonMcLean.com, HansonMcLean.com, and go to the radio section, we have a little... A couple articles about required minimum distributions. So just go to HansonMcLean.com and go to the radio section on that.
That's correct.
And while you're there, you can actually also look at our upcoming 7 personal decision points for retirement transition workshops. So you attend this.
Just essentially. If you're within 5 years of retirement, if you're within a year or two from retirement,
you should be there.
Should invest a couple Yeah. an evening or afternoon to come to our workshop.
Yeah, pretty low key. You get there, they're 75 minutes long. You're going to get Scott's book, Personal Decision Points. The last round that we had of these a while ago, the registration, we filled up a number of them. So you want to actually register early at HansonMcLean.com. So the dates are in the Sacramento area, March 8th at 7 o'clock out in Roseville, March 9th in Sacramento at Arden Hills Resort, and Saturday, March the 11th in the Marriott in Rancho Cordova. So in the Bay Area, we have a March 15th, 16th, and 18th. March 15th, 16th, and 18th, as well as a Denver, March 15th, 16th, and 18th. And all over the San Francisco Bay Area and Denver area. And you need to go to HansonMcLean.com to register. And like I said, a number of these filled up last time, so you'll register early, we'll get you in.
Yeah. So before we go back to the call here, and we'd love to take your call, 1-888-2-HANSEN. I've come to believe that the average person thinks their financial advisor is going to provide something that their financial advisor cannot provide them. Because oftentimes what happens, I'll be talking with somebody, oh, what kind of work are you in? I tell them, they say, oh, well, what do you think is going to happen with the stock market this year? What's going to happen with the economy this year? Where's a good place to invest now? How often do you get that, right? Where should I be investing now?
That's why I avoid people at all costs.
Well, and I think it's mutually feeling for most people when they come near you. No, but it's really, what should I be doing now? Here's the thing. Nobody can predict the financial markets. Nobody can predict the economy. We all would like to believe that people can. That's why every day there's articles published with people giving this their idea of why this is going up or et cetera, et cetera. But if you go back and look at any historical articles, you will see the inaccuracy of economists, the inaccuracy of stock predictors. That just nobody can predict the future. So if you're going to a financial advisor with the belief that they are somehow going to be able to determine when you should be in stocks, when you should be out of stocks, when you should be in gold, when you should get out of gold, when you should be in real estate, when you should get out of real estate. If that's what you think your financial advisor is going to do for you, you are sorely wrong.
So what is the advisor going to do for you? They're going to help mitigate risk?
hopefully they're going to help figure out what it is. They're going to work with you to determine what it is you're trying to accomplish with those dollars. You might have a very clear goal to begin with. You may not. Some people don't. And then they're, like you said, Pat, they're going to help
mitigate risk and make sure what a good advisor does is help make sure that you don't blow up, that you don't make a big mistake with your money, and that helps mitigate risk.
I was talking to someone, who was I talking to? No, within the last week or two. And I said, the biggest value that I believe a good financial advisor adds is keeping people from making mistakes.
Yeah.
It's not the excess return by outperforming the stock market or that's, it's keeping people from making mistakes that they cannot recover from.
Oh, especially if you're close to retirement or in retirement, you do not have a lot of time to go back and make it up.
You don't have,
a lot of time to go back and make it up. So
I think years ago, I had a client in Northern California. He had a secondary residence on the waterfront up in northern part of up in Washington, I believe. And he spent a lot of time up in Washington, and he had a fishing boat. And he talked about his fishing, and he'd spent 6.5 months up in Washington and 5.5 months in California. And he called me one day. This is a number of years ago. And he had this great investment hunch of something. He was literally going to take half his portfolio and invest it in a particular security. Half his portfolio. And so I kind of talked to him for a bit. It's like, well, why do you want to do this? We talked through it. And I said, well, look, let's call him Bill. Because that was his name. No, I'm kidding. So I said, Bill, here's the thing. If we do this, I'm happy to follow your lead here if this is really what you want to do. If we do this and you're right, you can trade your fishing boat in for a bigger fishing boat.
Makes sense.
If you're wrong, the fishing boat's gone and so is that second home.
So that's risk mitigation.
It's the thing you can't.
He wasn't going to be able to come back from a mistake.
And the risk he was taking would not have enhanced his life all that much.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes people confuse those things.
Well, oftentimes people
think. It would not have made his life better.
Oftentimes people think they want to get rich, and what they really want is not to be poor. People think that with their investments, they want to be rich, and what they really want is not
to
be poor.
They want that more. That's more important to them.
Correct. Is not to be poor. In fact, the studies bear that out.
Well, look, we got a team of roughly 20 certified financial planners somewhere in that neighborhood with offices throughout Northern California, offices in Denver. One of the things that our advisors are good at is helping work with clients, talk through these issues to figure out what's important to you. What are you really trying to accomplish here?
And make sure that your investment portfolio and your actions get you to that goal.
And also by helping with setting some realistic outlook, telling you what you need to know, what you need to hear, not just what you want to hear. Right? Exactly. I think that our advisors are great. At Hanson McLean. So if you're expecting your advice, if you're coming to Hanson McLean thinking that somehow we've got a silver bullet, we've got a crystal ball, we know exactly what's going to happen in the next 12 months, you're going to be disappointed because we don't.
Actually, anyone that tells you they do.
Advice. Anyway. So let's go to the phones here. If you want to join us, 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-242-6766. We're talking with Ray. Ray, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hey, good day.
Hi, Ray.
Hey, I was listening. I'm out here in Colorado. I was listening to your program on my way home from work. I think it was either Friday or Saturday. You guys were talking about student loans and the issues with student loans and the piling debt that people are dealing with. And I'm one of those people, and I'll be honest with you, I'm not sure what to do with this. And I know this may not relate directly to what your mission is and what you folks do.
Well, our mission is to help people. It's pretty simple.
Our mission is to help people.
Sure. Yeah. And really, that's kind of the spirit. If we help people, we charge for our services, but that isn't the main factor. The reason the business is successful is because the helping people is the goal. So tell us the situation. Are the student loans on yourself or someone in your family?
It's on my daughter. I co-signed for her beginning back in 2008, and all went well. She graduated. She was self-employed, doing very well, and she was involved in a crippling accident that has left her handicap mentally.
Oh, gosh, I'm sorry.
And knowing that she had some issues with the loan company, and I want to emphasize here that this was a private student loan, I stepped up to the plate, called them up, and said, hey, I am the co-signer for my daughter. She's been injured. She's not going to be able to make payments. And their first response to me was, well, we'll have to have a power of attorney from your daughter indicating that you're going to be, you know, paying these loans. And, well, I couldn't do that.
Yeah.
She was not capable of.
How much is the loan amount that is due?
Well, today it's $92,000. Originally, it was $85,000. I struggled in trying to get them to keep me apprised. I didn't even know what the amounts were or what are the payments that she was making. So I promptly got online using her passcode, because occasionally when she was in school, I would help her out with some things. And they learned that I was getting online and making what payments that they were showing online, and they locked me out. So I called them. They told me that it was against the law for them to pass any information on to me. I reiterated the fact that I am a note holder as a co-signer, and there's no law against you guys communicating with me.
When was the last time a payment was made on this loan?
The 15th of this month.
Okay, so
I've been making payments.
Got it.
Religiously.
Okay, so they haven't notified you yet that there's an overdue balance, and they haven't recognized. So they're not recognizing you, nor should they, as the co-signer of the loan, is because as far as they're concerned, it's your daughter's making the payments.
Well, I guess that's fair to say, but let me tell you, it took me 2.5 years to finally get somebody with some smarts who kind of circumvented their ridiculous network that they've got there. And what they did was they simply sent her statements care of me to my address.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only way that I was able to get realistic information. But in doing so, though, I learned that I had already paid more than $30,000 of ridiculous fees and interest charges, so forth and so on. So my hands were tied.
So
I finally was able.
What's your question for us?
Well, I would suggest that if you're going to be talking about student loans, you need to hit up the students who are having a real tough time with the private student loan industry. I don't know what you can do for me.
Are you unable to make these payments?
Well, he's been making them,
no.
So I guess he's able.
Yeah.
I've been making them.
Okay.
And again, so now I'm left with a loan balance, which is more than the original principal balance.
I get it.
Okay.
I get it.
And by a long shot.
So you might want to go visit a bankruptcy attorney to see if there's any sort of an...
Not to say that you're going to file bankruptcy.
No, correct. But they're the ones that would actually be able to help you deal with if there's some abatement of this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because you might find that a simple letter from an attorney to them saying, this is how I plan on paying this back, and this is how much I plan on paying back, and this is how you get there, might actually fix this situation. So the direction I would take is I would actually contact a bankruptcy attorney. And as we have said 100 times on this show, don't co-sign a loan. Unless you are able to actually pay off that loan with 100% certainty and you have the financial means to do so without jeopardizing your own retirement, do not co-sign a loan.
I know, and we appreciate the call. But this is not, this isn't the first time that we've seen somebody's retirement jeopardized
by
because of
student loans. And signing on a mortgage. Like
this. Here's an accident that caused this.
Awful.
And it
awful.
Also, there's, I mean, and disability insurance is an important thing. It's also very expensive. With some, I believe he said his daughter was self-employed. Pretty tough and pretty expensive for self-employed people to get disability insurance. But it's
yeah.
Boy, that's a
that's not a good story.
This was not not a good story at all. Now I'm kind of bummed.
But but again, don't co-sign a loan. That's just the simplest way to go about it. Don't co-sign a loan.
Yeah.
Actually, my son came to me and asked me if I would co-sign a line of credit, which isn't even a loan. It's just the possibility of a loan because he wants to start a business and he wanted a $60,000 line of credit.
And how much line of credit did you have when you started a business?
Probably $15,000 credit cards. That's a line of credit.
Yeah, okay, that's me too.
They're called credit cards, but technically it's a line of credit.
Actually, when I bought a tree trimming business when I was in college.
Did you use credit cards?
I borrowed $4,000 from my father.
Okay. Well, that's not a line of credit, but that's a loan.
Pretty much, I bought the company on the terms, so I didn't have any I didn't have any money, I didn't have any credit. Luckily, I had an old man who could loan me $4,000.
So he wanted me to...
He wasn't that old now, I think about it.
He wanted me to sign a line of credit for $60,000.
He's probably younger than I am now.
And I said to him, what's it for? And he said, I'm my business, and I'm going to do this and this. And I said, oh, I'd love to. What percentage of the business do I get in return for signing this line of credit? I said, let's talk about that. And he said, well, why
wouldn't
you?
What's in it for me?
Why wouldn't you do it because you're my father?
That's a good question. I kind of on his side.
What's that? What's in it? Why would I do it for free? I'm not taking a risk on for free.
Did you charge him rent when he was growing up?
He's 18. He's out of college. Not my problem anymore.
There you go. I bet you don't. Not quite the same with your daughter, are you?
No way.
Total double standard. I tell my kids that. Absolutely, it's a double standard.
My daughter.
I'm not worried about my son living out in the streets.
Yeah, my son needs to
figure it out.
Sleep at a friend's house.
Anyway. All right. Hey, we're going to transition this program to our real advice. This is the time during our program we talk to a very own Hanson McLean advisor, one of our certified financial planners at Hanson McLean, and talk to them about something that they've been working on. Keep in mind that this story you're going to hear is, this happened to an individual. May not, the experience that you have may be different than the experience that these advisors have. So anyway, we've got Eric Henry is joining us. And Eric is, of course, certified financial planner. Professionally, he's got more than 20 years in financial services. And he's been with Hanson McLean for, what, about 10 years, Eric?
10 years.
10 years. We're glad you're part of the Hanson McLean team here, Eric. So thank you very much.
I'm thrilled, too.
And so you're joining us on our real advice section to talk about something you work with an individual or a couple. Tell us the situation that was happening.
So this is a longtime client and couple, actually, and retired for some time as well. And just living a very peaceful retirement and over time just started to feel the burden of their property that they owned. And so as I was working with them, I just encouraged them to really consider moving to something closer to town, something less burdensome on their own daily lives. So they resisted that somewhat, just simply because they loved where they lived. But they started to see that life was changing for them. What really started happening in their own personal situation was that the husband started to show signs of memory loss. Mm. And at that point, the relationship that I had with both of them really started to transition more to the wife. And up to that point, my relationship had been primarily with the husband. He seemed to really have much more understanding and knowledge of their investments and how everything worked. So,
did the wife not want to play a role when they were both capable?
Not really, Pat. Okay. I mean, she just seemed very hands off, very trusting. Happy to see what they had, but not that interested in it on a day in and day out.
That's not uncommon. One spouse will take the ownership of it, and so the other spouse trusts them. It's a good long term relationship.
And sometimes it's the wife who takes the ownership. Sometimes it's the husband. Okay, so what happens then?
So his health continues to deteriorate. I continued to urge them to sell, and they ultimately did. They did. They found a much smaller place that they liked in a senior community closer to town, and that went very, very well. He was fine at home for about 8 months or so, but then his health just continued to decline from there. So she found a memory care facility for him that she liked and that he liked as well. The challenge came with, now how do I run two households? How do I pay for both, basically? And so that's where we had done quite a bit of planning. When they sold their property initially, they actually sold it for much more than they thought they would. And when they came to me and said, well, what do we do with this? I said, I don't want you to do anything with it. I want you to put it in the bank. You're going to need this. And they were fine with that. They were not very risk tolerant. So they followed that advice. The spouse or the husband moved into a memory care facility. Things went smoothly for a year, and then, of course, costs started going up. The wife called me, said, how am I possibly going to manage running one house that I'm living in and this other facility care that's costing me now $5,300 a month? And I walked her through the investments that we've been managing here for her. I'd indicated to her that we were not really not sending them very much income. They were not really in need of a lot of money. So we increased the distributions from the accounts that we managed here. But then I showed her how I wanted her to start to draw down some of the cash that they had in the bank and how that was going to continue on really for the rest of her husband's life. And so she was very, very comfortable with that idea, went to the bank, met with a banker who immediately tried to reposition all of the cash assets into an indexed annuity, which of course just threw everything into a whole new loop, really. So she came back to me, discussed that with me, and I re-explained to her why she would never ever want to invest in that, and why she'd never even want to move what we had here, how we were managing this, into anything like that. So it was just a new wrinkle where somebody else came along and said, hey, your investments over here aren't really doing as much as what I can do for you.
So, Eric, we say, hey, for your particular need, you need short
cash in the bank.
Term cash in the bank.
Right.
And we
exactly.
say, go to the bank. And they get to the bank, and the bank sends them to someone who doesn't technically work for the bank.
Mm-hmm. Or they might.
Or they work at a division of the bank. And they say, hey, this is a great investment. And because the person that sits in the bank is saying it.
They get paid a commission to do it, by the way.
Exactly.
It's got to be a good thing because the bank wouldn't send you anything that was bad unless you're a bank. So, which is just terrible because it was terrible advice for this client. Terrible. Why wouldn't she buy an indexed annuity? High fees. Lack of liquidity. Right? Her age had something to do with it.
That's exactly right.
So you say, exactly right. Don't do that. Then you come back on. She comes back in, and do you implement the plan?
I walked her right back through what we walked through 6 months previously, which was, here's how you're going to pay for both your places. Here's how we're going to draw cash out of the bank account. We're going to draw cash out of your investments, and you're going to use your Social Security income to run your other household. So once she saw it all, once she recognized, I've got plenty of money, I don't need any other products. I need to understand what I already have and not let anybody interfere or talk me out of this. We're in good shape.
Yeah. And how old is she?
She's 72.
Oh, and she's young.
She's 80.
Young.
Yeah.
Young.
Yeah.
That's hard.
And she's got, she's got wonderful benefits in place. And that was that was another facet of this, was just simply walking her through how she'll continue to have lifetime income,
and
regardless.
And had they been a client of the firm long?
They've been a client of the firm for 12 years.
So there was planning that went into this before the problem arose that they could actually manage this. It was just the wife that wasn't engaged in the process, and it very well easily it could have been the husband, needed to be brought up to speed on how it was working. So actually, that's
and protected from predators. Unscrupulous products.
Right.
Yeah, predators.
Yeah,
right.
Predators.
Right.
So we appreciate
lacking of compassion.
Well, that's actually a good way to put it, right? Where they were interested in selling a product and not solving a problem.
But then again, you know what's interesting, Eric? So Eric's been a part of Hanson McLane for 10 years, and a shameless plug in Hanson McLane. Eric's compensation doesn't vary based upon the product that our clients are invested in.
That's correct.
So whether clients are in a very conservative investment or some aggressive investment, it makes no difference on Eric's pay. Whereas this representative at the bank, he got paid nothing while it was sitting in the bank account, and he had the opportunity to earn a large commission by pitching an expensive annuity.
The interests were
not aligned at the bank.
So thank you, Eric. Thanks for being a long-term team member at Hanson McLane.
That's right.
Have a great
Love
day.
Love being here. Thank
yeah.
you.
Well, good. I'm glad you are here and glad you're able to serve clients. So anyway, appreciate that very much, Eric. So hey, I want to let everyone know about the series of workshops that we've got coming up. I think Pat mentioned it earlier in the program, but Hanson McLane, we've done free educational workshops for
20 years?
As long as we've been in business, actually. Actually, Pat and I did education workshops before we got out of business. So Pat and I have been doing workshops for
25 years.
More than 25 years. Anyway, we've got a great series of workshops. If you're within 5 years of retirement, really, if you're within a couple years of retirement, it's going to be worth your time to come to one of these workshops. It's our 7 personal decision points for retirement transition. We're going to cover how do you determine how much income you need? How do you figure out how to have the right kind of cash flow? How do you deal with Social Security, and many more things we'll be discussing. And it's a workshop format where you can follow along and look at your own situation. These workshops are in throughout Northern California and Denver in the Sacramento region, the week of March 8th in the evenings and mid-morning on that Saturday, and the Bay Area and in Denver the week of March 15th. So Wednesday evening, Thursday evening at 7 p.m., then again Friday midday at 11:15. All the details on this and registration is at HansonMcLane.com. You do want to register because they can fill out HansonMcLane.com for the workshops. And we're out of time, so we'll see you next week. Thanks so much for being part of Hanson McLane.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLane Advisors. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor or conduct your own due diligence.